Ab.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Christopher Cruz. We have breaking news at this hour. An Israeli military attack on Gaza may be imminent. In a nationally televised address today, Israeli Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari warned people still in northern Gaza, "We are going to broadly attack Gaza City very soon." More from CBS's Lana Zak.
The Israeli military said it is prepared for a potential invasion of Gaza by land, air, and sea as part of its retaliation for last week's attack. The IDF recently mobilized hundreds of thousands of reservists. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu met with troops at the border today.
And another Israeli military spokesman told reporters today that the bodies of some of the hostages abducted by Hamas militants a week ago were found during operations inside Gaza this week. CBS's Linda Gradstein says families of the hostages are now making demands on the Israeli government.
Among the hostages that Hamas took into Gaza are the elderly women and children. Some of them were reported wounded during their capture. They also include an unknown number of American citizens and other foreign nationals. The families say they want the world to pressure Hamas to release all of the hostages.
Many people, Americans among them, have gathered at the Egypt-Gaza border at this hour, but Egypt has not yet agreed to let Americans in. Lebanon's militant Hezbollah group says one of its fighters was killed during an exchange of fire with Israeli troops today. CBS's Robert Berger in Jerusalem says tensions have increased along the Lebanon-Israeli border since Hamas attacked southern Israel a week ago.
In Lebanon, you have the Islamic militant group Hezbollah. They're backed by Iran. They have 150,000 rockets pointed at Israel. And these skirmishes have Israelis very worried that they could escalate. There have been casualties on both sides. So the fear is that if Hezbollah enters the conflict, then we could have not a border conflict, but a major regional war.
Russia is now calling for a ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Former CBS News Moscow Bureau Chief Beth Noble says this is a curious development.
It's a little hypocritical that Russia is trying to step into a peacemaker role in the Israel-Gaza conflict when it's waging its own brutal war in Ukraine, a war that's cost thousands of lives.
Three people were shot and killed early this morning at a party at an industrial storefront in Denver. Three others were reportedly wounded and hospitalized. Police are saying now that evidence shows that at least two firearms were used in the deadly shooting. This is CBS News.
Staples stores provide innovative products and services for small business, remote workers and learners, even teachers and parents. Explore more at your local Staples store. Some days.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. People advocating against gerrymandered political maps in Wisconsin hope to derail a new Republican effort to overhaul the process. They say the so-called Iowa-style plan would make matters worse. Mike Moan reports.
Political researchers have long noted that Wisconsin has some of the most gerrymandered maps in the U.S., and Republican lawmakers have controlled the process in recent cycles. They're now pushing through a new plan to create an independent panel to draw new boundaries. But Yuseli Flores of the Wisconsin Fair Maps Coalition says it contains loopholes that would allow the GOP to essentially keep the reins.
And it just seems like a huge power grab that could permanently change the process for how we draw our state maps, and it just feels like it's going to be detrimental to our communities.
The coalition and Democratic Governor Tony Evers have embraced the idea of an independent process, but they contend this Republican plan doesn't have a high enough threshold to prevent the legislature from intervening. They're urging the Senate to reject the bill, which recently cleared the Assembly. GOP leaders say it's an opportunity to adopt changes constituents have been demanding. But skeptics say this is strictly a response to the state Supreme Court and its new liberal majority agreeing to hear challenges to the most recent maps. Flores says while that plays out, the public doesn't need to be excluded from a rushed attempt to establish new rules.
And what we need is a more independent, transparent, and inclusive process, rather than what they showed us.
If the state Senate gives its approval, Governor Evers has vowed to veto the bill. Meanwhile, the Wisconsin Supreme Court is scheduled to hear arguments in the redistricting case next month. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Support for this reporting was provided by the Carnegie Corporation of New York.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Pursuing the truth wherever it may lead. The Todd Alba Show, weekday afternoons from 1 till 3. Join the conversation. Get involved. The Todd Alba Show on your local civic media radio station and on the app. 93.5 The Tap. 93.5 The Tap.
This is a special broadcast of the 7th Annual Cap Times Idea Fest, which returned to Madison on September 17, 2023, with leaders from government, business, education, social justice, and culture. Coming out of the tumultuous times of last year, the Idea Fest moderators and guests looked ahead to what the future could look like in Wisconsin. The theme focused on how we reckon with change brought on by the pandemic, the Black Lives Matter movement, and other forces. The event was a hybrid of online and in-person events, and Civic Media has proudly partnered with IdeaFest and now presents segments of this year's gathering edited gently for time. Here now is Amy Davis with Alliant Energy, speaking online with community leaders about the ongoing challenges of getting food to rural Wisconsin.
Well, welcome, everyone. Thank you for joining us. I'm Amy Davis with Alliant Energy, and I'd like to welcome you to the Cap Times IdeaFest panel session entitled Feeding Rural Wisconsin Using Innovation, Technology, and Collaboration. Today's discussion will center on new, collaborative, and innovative solutions to provide more choice, access, and fresh food to those in need in rural communities. A pretty relevant topic, we think, for September, as it is Hunger Action Month. We hope each of you today will gain an understanding of the challenges surrounding rural communities and food insecurity. And we also hope you're inspired by these innovative ideas that support solutions for this challenge, as well as take away a potential way to help you solve a variety of other challenges. I'll be serving as the moderator for the panel today, and in just a bit, we'll explain the connection between a utility company's interest in this topic. But first, I really want to welcome our panel of experts. Please help me welcome the president of Second Harvest Food Bank of Southern Wisconsin, Michelle Orgay. The president of Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin, Patty Habeck, and the director of community health improvement at UW Health, Adrian Jones. I'm so happy that each of you are able to be here with us today and for sharing your experience and expertise with all of us. So now let's start with a little context to set up the discussion. Michelle, I'm going to start with you. Can you give us some background on food insecurity in Wisconsin? How many people in our state are food insecure, and what populations may be at higher risk?
Yes, thanks, Amy. And, you know, the numbers fluctuate and, you know, they spiked during COVID, but a lot of us are seeing those. I know our food bank here in southwestern Wisconsin is we're distributing more food than we did during the height of the pandemic. And I see Patty nodding, and I know that a lot of our colleagues all around the United States are seeing that same situation. But for a number, there are 427,000 plus folks facing food insecurity in Wisconsin. And that's information you can find by going to Map the Meal Gap. You can find information about specific counties as well. And folks can say, wow, like where are all these folks? And it's food insecurity can be pretty hidden. It's our neighbors. It's the folks that your kids are going to school with. And I know school just started, but it's everywhere. And, you know, it's hidden, and it's folks that you work with, you go to school with, it's your neighbors, and all these folks, everybody has aspirations. Everybody wants to accomplish all the same things as the rest of us do. Like we all have goals, but in order to achieve these goals, food is such an important element of that. And hunger makes everything harder. And facing food insecurity is one additional barrier. And not everybody has, even for food, folks who are facing food insecurity, not everybody has the same access to food resources. And some of the folks that are facing food insecurity at higher rates are communities of color and single female-headed households, folks from LGBTQIA2S+ communities. There are a lot of different communities that face this, and also folks in rural communities. You know, there are, according to the Food Research and Action Center, rural areas had higher poverty and their higher rates of food insecurity than metropolitan areas, 15% versus 11.8% for metro areas. And, you know, this chart that you see up here, this is something that we put together because when folks say, oh, well, aren't there supports for this? Well, there are a couple of different types of supports. There are supports that are available through public sources, and there's also the food bank and food pantry partner networks. And we both, you know, we work together and we work together in the sense that both are necessary. But when you look at this chart, it kind of points out why the public assistance benefits, SNAP, WIC, school meals, and things are so vital, but they don't cover everything. This chart here shows that, you know, we have the different levels at which a family of four in Wisconsin are eligible for different programs and support. And we compare that to the ALICE, which is the Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed budget, which is something United Way does. And the survival budget for that family of four is $63,000. And that is above any of those thresholds for qualifying for different programs and supports. But the stability budget, which has incorporates higher costs for maybe putting away a little bit of money each month for emergencies, mm-hmm. and that's almost $103,000 for a family. And when you think about rural communities, they face, I mean, I think job opportunities are less prevalent in those areas, and mm-hmm. transportation can be a real issue. When there's transportation issues in a metro area, there are food resources may be closer. So even if you don't have your own transportation, you can access more transportation and also access food resources. In a rural community, it is much harder. And, you know, for example, Clark and Vernon counties have about 8% of their households without access to a vehicle, and they're also beyond walking distance from a supermarket. So, you know, and it's tough. We talk about you either bring food to the folks that are needing food support, or you bring folks to the food. So it's challenging to find ways to best support folks in rural communities.
Michelle, thank you for that. I know I was really just blown away by that chart that you shared with us even last week as we were preparing for the discussion today. And it's one of the reasons that our company here at Align Energy, our foundation, has a focus of supporting hunger and housing programs because of those very statistics that you shared. In fact, our foundation team is partnered with each of your organizations to help provide sustainable solutions to helpfully start to move people out of hunger insecurity. And those programs include, you know, focuses on food nutrition, food pantries, and food banks, and so much more. So thinking of health, and maybe we could shift the conversation now to Adrienne. Let's talk about what being food insecure means for our health. Can you share a little bit more about the health impacts those experience this issue might face?
Yes, thanks, Amy. And it's exciting to be on this panel, you know, today with many of our colleagues and folks who we support here at UW Health. One of the things I want to highlight is a lot of what drives some of our initiatives at UW Health is what we hear in our community health needs assessment. And so to tag onto what was said in regards to, you know, income and things like that. So our Dane County Community Health Needs Assessment is, again, it's specific to Dane County. And one of the things that came out in our most recent community health needs assessment is that the median household income in Dane County is roughly around $75,000. But when you disaggregate that data to our BIPOC or communities of color, When you look at our African American and Latinx population, the median household income is anywhere between 32 to about maybe 44,000. And again, the average cost of living for sustainability is roughly around 54,000. So that really kind of paints the picture of what drives a lot of these inequities. And so when we're talking about food insecurity, we know that for adults and youth, some of the impacts cause chronic stress. And when you have chronic stress, you're more likely to deal with such things around diabetes and hypertension. In addition, we know that there's a huge impact on mental health. There's increased anxiety, depression, and also sleep deprivation. When we look at our children and adolescent population, many of youth who are facing food insecurity have issues with concentrating in school, may tend to display behavior that they're utilizing for coping. And so then you have those gaps in education as well. And then for our elderly population, of course, we know that food insecurity, of course, impacts their, you know, their longevity as far as quality of life. Some of the other things here is that when we talk about food insecurity, many of our communities live in food deserts. And so when we talk about what it means to eat healthy and access quality food, just like Michelle was saying, many of those grocery stores are not within walkable distance or close to public transportation. And so folks are either relying on, you know, like Walgreens or, of course, our food pantry services. And so here at UW Health, when we're screening our patients, we're screening for food insecurity under social determinants of health. And many of our patients are able to seek support from Second Harvest. And so that's one of the things that we're seeing here. I also want to highlight here in Dane County that we have high need zip codes who are facing the largest insecurity. And so that includes, and folks may be familiar with 53713, 53714, 53726, and 53715. And so while these are the high need zip codes that we're seeing as of today, this is not that much different than when the pandemic started. And again, just as Michelle said, we're seeing more increase of food insecurity. And a lot of that is related to as well to economic advancement. So having stable employment, access to transportation.
Adrian, thank you for sharing that. You know, you're illustrating how layered this challenge is, right? I think if it was straightforward, we probably would be making even more progress than we have, but it is not. It's very complex, right? Yes. And I think about working at an energy company with our teams. You know, energy is a basic need. We all need electricity to fuel our lives, and we need a place to lay our head at night, and we need food to eat, right? They're really kind of the three things that we need to be able to start to be able to have that basis.
Yes.
And so while we've been supporting all of the organizations across the state to try to help, you know, with meals and delivering food, you know, the issue is getting more complex. And when you then compound that with more rural communities, it starts to even get more complex. And so it's one of the reasons that we really wanted to partner with organizations and collaboratively determine how could we start to tackle some of these critical and chronically challenging hurdles in a new way, right? So, you know, one of the things that we wanted to do is learn, as we're all gathered here today to learn and share expertise, but we wanted to try to make a bigger and positive impact on challenges in the hunger space. And so that led us not only to the conversation today, but a new initiative that we're launching here at Align Energy, which we're calling our Rural Hunger Initiative. So Patty, I'll turn to you now. I know you were a part of the early collaboration process that we brought a group of people together, which you and Michelle were a part of originally, to help identify the challenges as we've started to list today, but also start to think about how could we develop some solutions. So could you tell us a little bit about the challenge that you all identified when we came together? I think it was about 6 months ago, and some of the specific challenges our rural communities are facing.
Absolutely. Thanks, Amy. And Adrian, thank you for that. You know, what's really interesting is we can talk about statistics, and in Wisconsin, that hunger statistic is so high, but you have to get past those numbers and start thinking of the faces and the families that are behind it, because that is actually what motivates you to find those innovative solutions and to do the work day in, day out to make sure that you're finding things that sustain and make new ways of thinking of solutions. So gathering together with the Alliant Energy Group and with a number of different food bank partners about 6 months ago or so, when we were really having that opportunity to think creatively about solutions, the challenges that we find when we are dealing with rural communities, which are many in Wisconsin, is that we're really dealing with communities where there is distance, as already mentioned, between people and food, where there is distance between people and opportunity or people and help. And so we have to get creative. We have to know how to serve these communities.
You're listening to a recorded session of the 7th Annual Cap Times Idea Fest held the week of September 17th, 2023, with Amy Davis from Alliant Energy speaking online with community leaders about the ongoing challenges of getting food to rural Wisconsin.
I am the CEO of Feeding America Eastern Wisconsin. So I have both the Southeast, which is urban area, and that is one type of addressing the need, but it's very close. It's very compact. When I'm working in our Northeast part of our state and in our rural communities, I have to think differently. I cannot apply the same solutions. And that's actually a good thing because I can learn back and forth between the two. One of the things that we learned that we were looking at is during COVID, we found that accessing food from our typical sources was more and more challenging. But what was really interesting is our rural communities were actually stepping forward, and it was actually easier to access some of that food from and through our rural communities' supply chain. The supply chain was closer to the farmers and closer to the suppliers at that time. And being a food bank, we can act big sometimes. We can go and access food on a large scale. But more importantly is we understand how to act small and how to be in our communities and with our neighbors and understanding how to take advantage of the very rich resources that Wisconsin has to offer for the food area. So the challenge to that was for us to think differently. If we are going to really serve our rural communities well, it's not so much about what can we bring into the community. It's understanding what's already in a community, knowing what the needs are of that community and what the neighbors need, and then finding innovative solutions to be able to utilize those strengths of those rural communities and address hunger differently. So for example, it would be easy enough for me to make a large purchase and bring a semi-load of a food product into a small community and distribute it. The challenge to that is if I did that consistently, I may unintentionally be causing some harm to the local food system. So if I first understand the local food system and I understand what is already there, how can we as a food bank partner with what's already there and be able to lift up that community, we're actually not causing unintended consequences, but we're actually having the positive impact that we intend right from the beginning. So food banks spend a lot of time understanding who are the communities that we're serving, what are their needs, who are the neighbors in those community. And the only way we can do that is when we're in partnership and in collaboration with the communities. So we are absolutely aware of what's happening in our rural communities and how we can partner to have the biggest impacts. A lot of times our pantry partners or food partners in those small rural communities also need other things that are not food related. They might have access to food, but they might need help with infrastructure to be able to store that food or distribute that food. They might need help with transportation to even move it out from the rural center to other more rural communities. They might need help with our help with understanding if there's any recalls or anything that we need to pay attention to, because we can get that information very quickly and share that. Making sure that we provide proper receipting. All of that is not so not so much lifted up or exciting, but when we can take those pieces and do that, we're actually helping the rural communities have more opportunity to go down and in and with their neighbors and provide that food support. So a food bank's role is really to serve in collaboration with the rural communities and with the resources, the strong resources that are in those communities, to make sure we're lifting it up and giving the most strength. And sometimes it's not the obvious answer.
Thank you, Patty. You know, I remember being a fly on the wall during that day that you all were getting together and collaborating. And as you were kind of listening or listing what I call the problem statement, right? It had many attributes, whether that is, you know, SNAP benefits don't really serve older populations, or this concept that you alluded to of, you know, in a rural community, there may be one lone, maybe small business grocery store and sometimes food pantries, and that influx of food that you mentioned can actually compete with maybe one of the last businesses in an area that is preventing it from being a food desert and creating jobs in that community. So it was just such a great discussion and so insightful. I think it really was just the, you know, listeners today are hearing just a smidge of what it was that we all realized was really becoming the catalyst that we needed for combining our resources and working across organizations to set some goals and create this Rural Hunger Initiative. So really everyone on this call today are among the first to hear about this new opportunity. So based on this brainstorming with both of you and others that were in attendance that day, we were able to identify a few innovative solutions to combat just some of the challenges that Patty and Michelle and Adrian have shared with us today, specifically targeting food insecurity in rural communities. And so this is a collaboration with both Alliant Energy and our foundation and our food bank partners across Wisconsin and Iowa. And there are going to be some new and unique programs that are developed by this collaborative group to launch and start making an impact as soon as this fall, just in a few weeks. So I'm very proud, obviously, to work at Alliant Energy and to be able to share the news about this, a new initiative, which our charitable foundation is going to dedicate $1 million over the next 2 years to try to tackle some of these unique challenges. And the initiative overall is going to be designed to provide better access, more choice, and fresh food to those in need in rural communities. So we really see this as an example of how we think about trust-based philanthropy, which gives partners like you all and others who aren't on the call today an opportunity to try and do things in a different way, right? It's similar to giving these partners the ability to do research and develop on their own. And your thoughtful approaches are all going to be grounded in your expertise, the feasibility, and the willingness to try new things. And I know from spending the first decade of my career in the nonprofit world, it's not often that you can write a grant or get funding for something that hasn't been done before. So Michelle, do you want to talk specifically about the program that you and your team in partnership with Patty's team are going to be working on?
Yes, thanks. You know, trust-based philanthropy should also, to some degree, it should definitely also apply to the folks that we're supporting. I mean, we should be able to trust the folks. We should be trusting the folks that we're aiming to be providing food support to. We should trust them to make some choices, right? And food banks are often we are often torn between or like have this balance between efficiency and effectiveness. And everybody loves the efficiency of food banks and it's great. But, you know, there's a point where we also have to figure out, like, is it being effective? And so if you've got 100 folks, you could be really effective by having 100 different solutions to each, you know, each person. That's not necessarily efficient. And efficiency could be we're going to go out to this rural community and we're going to be there at this one point, this one day. And it's really convenient for us and being very food bank centric. And we're going to go there and everybody come here to our chosen day, time, location. And we've got food that we've chosen, that this is what we have available. And that's efficient. But there's, you know, and it's not a one size fits all approach. So that may be great for some folks. And so we have, you know, trying to figure out the balance. And, you know, when Patty and I were setting up the problem statement, if you call, you know, if you will, it's okay, well, thinking in like maybe traditional food bank terms, well, let's pack up boxes of things and let's get them out individually. For them. So that's not that much better and it's not efficient. So how can we be the most efficient with our effective programs? And you know, innovation is we're not doing it to be fancy or to be innovative, but we're trying to find new ways to do things. So when we're thinking about how to support a community, how to listen to a community, and we still have a lot to learn. Part of this the funding that Alliant Energy Foundation is providing is really smartly, like feasibility, you know, just launching into something that we think might work. We, Patty and I and other folks have, and our teams have thought about this for a while. There are other groups around the country doing versions of this for their communities. And we want to build on those things that other folks have already learned and see what will work for our communities. You know, this is focusing on individuals, but it is about this, you know, looking at how to provide support to folks in rural communities. The idea is that we would provide a card in a convenience term, like instead of like vouchers for a specific store or chain, we want, our goal is to have a card, like a food debit card, if you will. Again, we don't have all the things figured out, but an individual family would have this card. It would provide a certain amount of resource access to, we're hoping to any grocery store, any supermarket, any convenience store, because, you know, especially even with lack of transportation, you don't know which community you're going to be in. And so we don't want to make it so specific to a community or a certain chain that you can go and you get the food that you want, that, you know, it's produce, it's dairy, it's certain things. It's not just a straight up cash card. It's a card that is specific to foods that we've types of foods, not specific foods that we've chosen. So it gives us dignity of choice. It gives us individual opportunity. It gives convenience. And it's much more efficient than us packing up boxes, putting them on our trucks and getting out there. And like, it might not even be what folks find to be useful to them. So, you know, we have to figure out the best way to do this, who it's going to be best for. And we also think that this, to Patty's point of supporting communities, we want to strengthen local food economies and strengthen local communities. And this is a way to be able to have the money continue to be spent in those communities. And, you know, we don't want there to be fewer supermarkets, fewer grocery stores. And we wouldn't be intentionally bringing in a truckload of food that would compete with a place. We want to complement the things that are already going on. So our goal is to figure out the best way to do this. And then if other folks and other food banks want to do the same thing, like just share it with everyone. But so many things to figure out in the ways to make this work. And ultimately the goal is what's best and what we hear from the folks who are going to be the users of the system that we are hopefully co-creating with communities.
This is a recorded session of the annual Cap Times Idea Fest, held the week beginning September 17th, 2023 in Madison. More to come after these messages. You're listening to a recorded session of the annual Cap Times Idea Fest held the week of September 17th with Amy Davis from Alliant Energy, speaking online with community leaders about the ongoing challenges of getting food to rural Wisconsin.
Michelle, I think that's great. I like what you said there about the individual and choice, right? And you think about that dignity that comes with having choice. And even just the convenience of this idea that it could bring to people and the control. I mean, there are all manner of things that guide our food choices, whether it's cultural traditions. And so some foods might not be right for some families or audiences. It could be dietary. As Adrian was talking, dietary needs that different people have. So this concept you all are starting to, it's in the incubator, if you will, mm-hmm. is going to bring a lot of that. And these aren't challenges that we even talked about yet in the 30 minutes or so that we've been talking. So I'm excited about this concept for sure. Patty, I want to turn back to you, if I can, for a minute. Could you share with people who are watching today a little bit more about the process we did to get all the ideas out on the table and talk through new ways and kind of, you know, how we got to this kind of idea of how we could accomplish this?
Absolutely. It was a great time. It gave an opportunity for us to slow down, stop, and communicate with each other to compare thoughts and ideas. So what really happened is Alliant chose a kind of a centrally located site, which was in Dubuque, kind of a fun food community to be in, and invited Michelle and I from Wisconsin, as well as some Iowa food banks together. And the process was a facilitated process where we went through a series of questions. We went through some thinking. We had the opportunity to make some pitches, if you will, to each other and also to Alliant to start thinking about this was a gift of time, truly, to not only share information, but to have this gift of time to think through the innovation. Sometimes, you know, you get as leaders of and in my case, a food bank, Adrian's case, you know, working day to day, day in, day out with individuals.